I'm Professor Jonathan Shallett, OBE. I'm chairman of the UK's preeminent independent talent management company, known as Intertalent Rights Group, formerly RAW. We're based in central London, and we are the UK's largest independent talent management company.
It was RAW.
Correct.
For a long time.
Some 7 years.
7 years. What was the reason for the rebranding, and why Intertalent?
I love the name RAW, and as you rightly say, we were called RAW for 7 years. Previously to that, we've been called Shallett Global, as in my surname. And I'd decided to stop calling us Shallett Global because essentially the business was about me. And that's both a good and a bad thing if your name's above the door. It's good that it builds your personal profile. It's good that it can make you known in your industry quicker. Mm-hmm. But it's bad because it's very hard to grow beyond being a one-man band, because normally if your name's above the door, whatever you do, people want you. And so as you grow, you might get more clients, but the clients you have get upset they're not getting as much attention, so some come and some go. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I decided to take my name off the door, have a generic name, so I could make a much bigger company that would appeal to some fantastic employees and colleagues, and that's exactly what happened when I changed the name from Shallett to RAW. RAW, we chose the name because RAW represented what we did, rights, ownership, artist representation. And since I formed RAW, I also bought two other great companies. I brought into them the RAW Group, and we were expanding internationally. Unfortunately, in America, there was a company called RAW, which had registered the name before us. That meant internationally, there was confusion growing. Mm-hmm. A sign of our success, but before we had the international success, it didn't matter. And also in the UK, I was known primarily for RAW, but I bought two other brands, a leading acting agency called Cold Kitchen and a leading comedy agency called Christian Knowles, CKP. Mm-hmm. So I decided to bring them all together under one name. And I wanted to look for a name which really said what we did and represented our work in its entirety. And eventually we came up with the name Intertalent, mm-hmm. because we are in the talent business. Primarily, that's what I do. I work with great talent. And Inter, in front of talent, that sums up the internationalisation of what we do, the interdiversity of what we do, the intersynergy of what we do. So really, the word inter represents the spread of what we do, and talent is what we do.
And how would you say Intertalent is different from other management agencies? Why should a client sign with you and put their career in your hands?
When a client chooses a management company, they're partly going to choose that company because of what they've heard, partly because of what they experience, and partly because they like them. Mm-hmm. You assume they're going to choose because they think you're good, so I'll put the good to the side. I think in our case, we care. And that might sound flippant and well, everybody cares, but I know from experience that the people that work at Intertalent go further, higher, work harder, and are more committed to the betterment of our clients' careers than our rivals. And I can look any client in the eye and say, we will be around longer and work harder for you and become more committed to your career than any other manager in London.
Mm-hmm. Would you say a lot of pressure comes with attaching your name to an agency? So when it was called Shallett after you, was there a sense of pressure that comes with that?
I think there's pressure of owning a business. Mm. And whatever that business is called, there's pressure. Because with owning a business, when you service other people, there comes a massive responsibility. Because I have three sets of responsibilities. In terms of my business, I have a set of responsibilities to both my clients and my staff and colleagues. Mm-hmm. Then I have a personal responsibility to my family. And that's a lot of responsibility for an individual to have. And people who don't own their own businesses don't always necessarily realise the extra part of the responsibility you have beyond your day job.
How is it managing the work-life balance? How much do those two sort of sides of you interlink? Because I know you're available every day of the year. You don't take holidays, you don't believe in lunch meetings or honeymoons or anything like that. Your time is very precious to you. So how do you come to work and sort of leave family life at the front door, or do you?
I don't. You know, I love my work, and my work is my life. But I do that because I love it. You know, not many people in this world can say they absolutely love their work and their work's their hobby. Mm. And in my case, my work is my hobby. My work's my life. Every aspect of my work I love. And I love who I work with. I love who I interact with. Mm-hmm. I love my clients. Mm-hmm. I love my work colleagues. I love the people I meet through my business. And I got married when I was 48. So some people get married young and they evolve their lives and hopefully their partner keeps abreast with them. Mm. But in my case, I had the advantage of when I met my wife, Katrina, she knew who I was, what I was and what I did. And it was a life she was had to become part of.
Yeah.
And she's very, she's a wonderful lady and she entirely supports what I do. Mm. And she loves what I do. She loves the people I work with, both internally and externally. So I'm able to have that life which combines my work. So for example, one of my favorite places to go to is the capital of the entertainment world, the World Entertainment Capital, Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a great place to go because it is the very epicenter of my business. Katrina loves going there because it's a great place for her to go and catch up with friends. So when I go to Los Angeles, I can combine work and pleasure. Unfortunately, my children like it as well.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, why are you based in the UK and not over there? You must have considered it.
I think the answer is I have considered being based in America. But I love the UK. I think the UK is the greatest country in the world. I think London is the most exciting city in the world. And I've built a business in London. My family and close friends are in London. And I'm providing a service to the British entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. So I love going to America because I know America so well. It allows me to provide unique opportunities to my British clients because many of the global decisions for the world entertainment business are made in Los Angeles. Because I know people in Los Angeles, I know the people at the very top of the tree in Los Angeles, I can use that to the benefit of my UK clients.
So, people who have had careers with longevity in the entertainment industry, what are they doing correctly? What's the formula?
I think the formula for success in any industry is the same. I don't think any particular industry has a different formula for success. First of all, there's a combination of attributes you need to be successful in any business. Mm-hmm. At the very core, you need talent. Whatever that business you're in is you need talent. In the entertainment business, in the performance business, you need to be able to perform or sing or act or present or dance or design or create. But you've got to have that immense talent. That immense talent would apply to a banker, would apply to someone who works in the car business or the aeronautical business or the biology business. It's the same, you need talent. And if you're going to be great and have longevity in your business, you've got to be very talented at what you do. I guess in the short run, you can fool people that you're not.
I was going to say, yeah, I can think of quite a few people I'd say have no talent on the outset, but maybe their talent is hidden in other ways. They're great business people or they're very driven. Would you say that applies?
I think being driven applies in any business. I think if you're really driven, you can drive limited talent a long way. Only so far you can take limited talent, but driven people can take their careers beyond their talent. Mm. I always do, for me, a line in the sand. If you can get past 5 years with a reasonable profile, to me that's someone who's starting to have longevity at what they do. Because many people come and many people go after a couple of years. So if you're around for 5 years, then you're starting to be worthy of respect.
Do you ever advise anyone to not enter the public eye?
If I meet people before they enter the public eye, whether they're entertainers or any walk of life, and they ask me what I think, I will tell them the consequences of entering the public eye. And the consequences are you lose your privacy. The more successful you become and the more known you become in the public eye, the more you become owned by the people. And for some people, that's difficult. And that could be for two reasons. Firstly, creative people are often private people, and it's sometimes hard to understand that your success through creativity makes you public property. Mm-hmm. And once you become public property, people have expectations of you. Expectations might not be reasonable, but expectations all the same. I'd also advise other people who aren't in the entertainment business or show business or the music business or film or television or dance business or any kind of public persona business. I had a friend some years ago in the property business and he was offered the opportunity to be on television presenting a property program and asked what I thought. His wife was against it and I said to him, why is your wife against it? And he said, because she's worried some aspects of our private life will come out. I said, well, it will come out. If you go on television and your show is reasonably successful, newspapers will start writing about you. So if you've got any skeletons in the cupboard or anything you don't want people to know about, it's best not to go public. And he said, you're right, I'm going to stay private.
What qualities do you think make you the best at what you do?
Commitment, dedication and talent.
And when you were younger, before all of this, was this the goal? Did you always see yourself a sort of a business owner, CEO in the entertainment industry? Did you even have that vision?
I think when you're younger, you can't often comprehend where you might get to. If someone had said to me, describe what you want to do when you're young in terms of where you are now, I wouldn't have known what I do now really exists. So I couldn't have described it. I kind of evolved to where I am now. So each stage of my career, I could see, but I couldn't envisage where I am now, because I couldn't envision sitting to you here, being a professor, being an honorary doctor, being an OBE, having been honored by the Queen, having taken my parents to Buckingham Palace, employing 35 people, running a multi-pound business, you know, being on first name terms and having on speed dial the Prime Minister, talking to presidents, talking to British leaders. I couldn't have envisaged that because, well, how could I have? It just wouldn't have been possible. But this week alone, now I've been fortunate and honoured enough to meet some of the people involved with Windrush and some of the victims from the Caribbean who weren't able to get passports or recognition in this country. And because of my relationship with the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary, I was able to text them directly and they've been able to assist, and I've been able to arrange some passports for people who were victims of the Windrush tragedy.
Would you describe yourself as a powerful person?
The answer is, the truth is, I'm a powerful person, but I'm only a powerful person because of the business surrounding me.
How much do you personally take credit for the success of your clients?
I work in the we business, and my success is because of the we of who I work with. So my clients and my business are successful because I'm surrounded by great people. When people use the word I always say to them, it's very rare that I is responsible for success, it's we. Mm-hmm. So often people will get credited with that person was responsible for something. That more often than not is a PR statement. Because the truth is, success is cumulative. And success comes because a number of ideas, a number of people come together at the same time, at the right moment.
And what is the motivator in all of this? What do you get out of it? Is it the notoriety? Is it the power? Is it the money?
I was actually walking down the street today thinking, you say, is it the money? So I've got a great idea for a theatre show. I'm not going to say what the idea is, but I'm speaking to a great writer, a world-renowned writer, to write the screenplay for me. And the writer sent me an email yesterday saying, think of the commercial upside, think of the merchandise of your idea, it's brilliant. Mm. Well, the truth is, I'm not thinking about the commercial upside, because I don't think if you start with the commercial upside, I think that's the way to make a creative project fail. Mm. You've got to start with a really great idea. The only thing you can start with is great creativity or great talent. Mm-hmm. Money and financial success will follow, or may follow, great creativity and great talent. But if your starting point is, how can I make as much money as possible? You'll probably fail.
What would have happened, though, if you had a job that you loved, that made you very happy, great family life, great people around you, but it wasn't making you any money? Then what do you do? Where your heart is in it, but it's not reaping any financial success, what would you do?
Well, different people have different needs in terms of financial income. Mm. So I think, and everybody's definition of success is different. When I talk to people about being successful, it's not for me to define success for individual. Each individual has their own definition of success. Mm. And there's no right or wrong. Mm. I think to me, success is probably, if you're going to generalize the word success, it's about having pride in what you do. It's about enjoying what you do. It's about living to a financial level you're happy with, about having enough comforts to make your life comfortable, and in the long run, sharing your life with someone that's special to you. It took me till I was 48 to find that special person. But I think if you love what you do and you're fortunate enough that you can really enjoy your day and enjoy the opportunities your career gives you, whatever you earn financially will probably be enough.
Have you ever failed?
We've all failed. He who makes no mistakes makes nothing.
Have you ever made bad financial decisions?
I've made bad decisions over the years. I mean, listen, I'm 56 now. You don't get to 56 without having made mistakes. But however, the mistakes I've made, I've learned from. I have no problem with making mistakes for me or anybody else. My problem with making mistakes is you repeat the mistakes. You know, when someone in my company makes an honest mistake, I'll never reprimand them for that. I'll often not get angry. And some people over the years, when employees have made mistakes that cost me a lot of money, have sometimes said, how come Jonathan's so relaxed about that person making the mistake? If it's an honest mistake and the person did it with the right intentions and did it with the intention of doing good, and they're upfront about it, I'll forget it and move on. Mm. When I won't move on is when someone lies to me or tries to cover up a mistake.
To own your mistake is what you're saying. This is good to
know. And learn from your mistake. In fact, sometimes if you make a mistake, that's the best way to learn.
I have a quote that I really hope is from you. You said, the harder I work, the luckier I get. The opportunities I've had, I've gone out and found.
Absolutely correct. I always say to people, when I bump into people who I grew up with, or I went to school with, they'll often say, oh my God, you're so lucky. You've had such an amazing life. That's incredible. And I go, yes, I have had an amazing life. Yes, I guess it's incredible, but that's your word, not mine. But don't say I'm lucky, because the truth of the matter is, if I'm lying on my sofa watching telly, or I'm getting drunk in a pub, the front doorbell doesn't go. There's not a knock on the door saying, hello, my name's Mr. Lucky. Mr. Lucky doesn't go around and knock on your front door. You find Mr. Lucky if you go out and meet people, if you network, if you create opportunities, or you work hard. That's how you get lucky. You get lucky by putting yourself out there. So to say the harder you work, the luckier you get, is, I think, a real truism.
I wanted to talk to you a bit about sort of the entertainment industry. First question is a bit of a weird one, but I've always wondered, why are so many celebrities in the closet? And is it a conversation you have with clients?
I don't think any more celebrities in the closet than any other business. I think there are many aspects to the entertainment business, or people who work in the entertainment business, that gets talked about because those people are more interesting to talk about. But I think the makeup of people, it's the same in any business. In every business, you get different kinds of people. And I think some people feel comfortable coming out and talking about their sexuality, and some people want to keep that private. But that's no different in the film business, the television business, the music business, the banking business, the pharmaceutical business, in the airline business, the sports business. Some people want to keep private the kind of people they are, and some people are happy to talk about it. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. It's what matters. It's what's personal to you.
But what about the idea of some really hot guy who's an actor and he's secretly gay, and if he was to come out, does it really affect sales of the movie and things like that?
Well, you're talking about an actor who's gay who's scared to come out, but there are equally bankers who are scared to come out. There are politicians who are scared to come out. It's not just, you know, the entertainment business or acting business where people are scared to come out. I think, first of all, we know in this day and age you can have huge success in the entertainment business when you're gay. So there's certainly no reason to hide your sexuality because you're worried it's going to stop yourself being successful. But some people, in the most simplest form, and I talk to my gay friends, don't want their mum and dad to have to know they're gay. Sometimes someone once said to me, he felt able to be publicly gay when his mum had died because he didn't want. He knew it upset her. I'm not saying she was right or wrong to be upset, but he just knew it up, and everyone was upset his mum because she was fantastic, and he knew how much his success was based on what she had done, and he didn't want to cause that upset. So I think different people have different reasons for when they come out or don't.
So they're not really advised at any point by their management? I'm just thinking about boy bands.
I think if you're a, you know, clearly if you're a manager and you're asked a question about, you know, someone's sexual. I mean, you could equally say to a boy band, in the same way you could say, don't come out and say you're gay, and I wouldn't say that, by the way. I think I let people be who they are. Mm-hmm. But you could say to a boy band, or a girl band for that matter, don't have boyfriend or girlfriend publicly because you want people to think you're available. Mm. I think, you know, traditionally people think the single, good-looking, heterosexual people have more appeal to potential audience. But I'm not sure that's really true. If you don't see people going, because you're gay, I'm not going to buy your record, or that I'm not going to watch your movie or a TV show or your dance. I think people enjoy great creativity, whatever the sexuality of the person doing it.
And what about the mental health and the general happiness of your clients? What do you do to make sure that they are happy and that they are healthy and they don't sort of go off the rails, or they're not suffering internally and just not telling anyone? Does your relationship with your clients extend beyond the professional relationship?
I think, first of all, when it comes to mental health and diet, that applies to all walks of life. Mm. You have a choice in life. Be healthy, live healthily, exercise, eat properly, eat sensibly, or don't. We all know from the magazines and newspapers every day, because it's rammed down our throats, what are good and bad foods and drink to consume. Now, the question is whether you choose to be sensible in what you consume, and different people have different approaches to that. It doesn't relate to your business, that just relates to you as a person. You get unhealthy and healthy people across all industries. I think if you want to be successful in a business consistently for a long period of time, you've got to have energy. You have energy through being fit and healthy. So my advice to anybody who wants to be successful is be fit and healthy. My advice to anybody who's not fit and healthy is you've got more chance of being successful if you are fit and healthy. Mm. So I think that's a very simple conversation. It doesn't relate to the entertainment business per se. Now, when it comes to the entertainment business, you've got to be more good looking to be successful. Now, if you're a banker, you can be the ugliest minger in the world. But if you're a good looking, if your brain's a brilliant banking brain, no one's going to judge your banking skills and the way you look. They're going to judge your banking skills on your brilliance as a banker. And you might even, you know, whether you're a bank manager or your cleaner or the guy who mends your car, you're not going to go, you're too ugly to mend my car. Mm. If they're the right person to mend your car, you're Harlem, whatever they look like, or a plumber. However, when it comes to buying a record or some music or going to watch a play, a musical, a film, a theatre show, a television show, you want to look at someone who you enjoy looking at. Mm-hmm. Of course, different people enjoy looking at different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And some people have characters. They're not traditionally good looking, but they're characterful. Mm. But you don't really get much enjoyment at looking at someone ugly. Now, it's one thing, as I said, if a plumber comes to your house to mend your drains, then you're not going to look at them. You're going to welcome them into your flat and leave them. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to sit on a movie screen for 2.5 hours and watch someone repulse you on a movie screen for 2.5 hours. And if you do see that person, the odds are you won't come back.
It's interesting you say that, because your recent gastric bypass surgery, how much of a role did vanity and the fact that you are a man of show in show business, how much of a role did that have to play?
I have a colleague who works for me called Severine Berman, who's worked for me for 13 years. And she once said to me, you want to be successful, you should do to yourself what you tell your clients. And what you should do to yourself is lose weight. If you lose weight, you're going to be more successful. And the truth of the matter is, and I can say this because I was a fatty. You know, I'm now wearing a jacket which is 40, and my jacket was 46 before. My waist has gone from 40 inches to 33 inches. I'm now wearing a fitted shirt as opposed to a large shirt. Mm. The truth is, I have my gastric bypass, which is exactly what it is, a gastric bypass, because I had diabetes. And if you have a gastric bypass, it can cure your diabetes. And in my case, it's done exactly that. Now, the consequences of that are losing a lot of weight. Mm. And the truth is, I feel a lot better for losing the weight. I'm working harder. I always worked hard before. Mm. So the poor people around me are now experiencing an even greater energy bunny. Today I sleep 4.5 hours before I slept 8 because I couldn't get out of bed.
Wow.
I don't sweat anymore. I sleep properly now. I exercise more. My brain works better. And I know from when I go into a room, people take no more notice of me. but they don't, particularly in America, they don't know me as much as the UK, because they see a fit guy in a sharp suit. Whereas before, I might have been wearing a black suit, but my fat was sort of bulging over my collar and over my waistline. And that's gone, and that makes you be taken more seriously by people.
But was it an insecurity of yours, or were you happy?
I was never insecure. I remember I got married to my wonderful wife the way I was. So, a lot of people say to me now, you're skinny, your poor wife, you might leave her, which is the complete opposite. I love my wife even more because she helped me go through that journey.
Mm.
The answer is I was very happy, but I actually had it because of my diabetes and my wife putting pressure on me because her father had died of diabetes-related illnesses, and so she didn't want me to. And so her and my daughter were always going on at me to lose weight.
You've said you're a workaholic, but what is the goal? When are you going to stop? Is there ever going to be a point where you just stop answering the phone calls and emails and just choose to relax on a sunbed in LA?
I love what I do. I love creativity. So I'm sure that what we do at any time in life is governed by how we feel in the terms of how old we are and our ability to do certain things. So, for example, I used to do triathlons and love skiing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think now at my age of 56, hurtling down a mountain is probably very sensible because I'll probably break a bone more easily. I mean, I haven't got the energy I used to have to run for a bus and suddenly go from zero speed to sprinting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just because of my age. What I have got is experience. So that counteracts my slowing down as I get older. But equally, I love what I do. I love creativity. So when a new creative idea comes into my mind or a talent I work with has a new creative idea, that's what inspires and excites me. And so I guess I'll continue working until the day I physically and mentally can't.
What's the most valuable lesson you've learnt in business?
Listen. What have I got on my face? I've got one of one thing and two of one other thing.
That came up in the last interview.
But it's important.
Two ears, one mouth.
Yeah, I've got two ears, one mouth. And the reason God gave you two ears and one mouth is to listen twice as much as you talk.
Would you apply that same piece of advice to just life in general? Would you say that's the greatest piece of advice that you can pass on, is to just listen?
I think, yes. I mean, it all goes down to one word, learn. And whoever you are, whatever you're doing, learn. And when you're talking, you're not learning. So if you're talking, and of course there's a time to talk, because at some point you've got to express what you want and need to express.
Mm.
But when you're in a business situation and you're looking to develop a relationship with someone, whether it be new or further,
mm-hmm.
you need to consider, I think, when you're talking, is your talking and what you're saying giving value to your ambition? Or actually would the person you're talking to prefer to be the one talking?
I actually want to talk about your OBE. You got that in 2014.
That's correct.
For your contribution to the creative industry.
I got my OBE for my services to the entertainment and creative industries.
Mm-hmm. How does that come about? What was that day like? And was it something you were always aiming for?
I never in a million years imagined I was going to get an OBE. I mean, I knew the honour system clearly because you read about people getting honours and you meet people over the years with honours. But I never imagined I would get an honour.
Mm.
And it only started to dawn on me I might get an honour when some people in my business suggested to me that I deserved an honour.
Mm.
But that comment was made quite a few times over the years and it was exciting and a compliment at the time. But because it didn't happen, I put the thought to the back of my mind. So on the day I got the letter from Downing Street, because you've got the way it works, you get a letter from the Prime Minister saying the Prime Minister's minded to recommend you to Her Royal Highness, Her Majesty the Queen, that you're going to be put forward for an honour.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually in a meeting and talking to someone and my assistant came into the room with his letter sort of in tears and tried to sort of interrupt me and I said, I'm talking, and she said to the person I was with, can I please take Jonathan away for a moment? And she took me away and showed me his letter.
And so now that you've got the OBE, you're a professor, you're an honorary doctor, what more is there? Are you involved in politics? Are you planning on...
I've been asked to be involved with politics over the years, and I think as you get older, you have a social conscience more and more, and you give back. So in answer to politics, I mean, a lot of people despise politicians. A lot of people are very dismissive about politics, you know, having a caricature of what politicians are and what politics represents. But the truth is, politics is what makes a country progress, and the politics is what brings a country together. So I think my interest in politics is about social advancement for people and communities.
Is the entertainment industry fake?
I think the entertainment business is one of the most genuine businesses in the world. You know, I used to say to my dad, he was a banker, that, you know, he was in the business of ungentlemanly people behaving in a gentlemanly way, doing ungentlemanly acts. I would say about my business, you have people that might look like ruffians, but they tend to do things in a very gentlemanly way, and a gentleman, or gentle ladies for that matter. I think the one of the wonderful caveats of creative people who are successful is they're totally honest about what they do. And I think actually when it comes to creativity and developing creativity and talent, honesty does genuinely win through. Because I don't think you can con people in the short run, but you can't trick people in the long run. Now, at the end of the day, people have the option to walk away. If they don't like the creativity you're offering them or the talent you're offering them, they'll turn off or they'll turn over or simply won't buy a ticket. So there comes a point when you're offering creativity and talent when people have got to like what you do. And if you're not honest, people will see through that. People aren't stupid. They will see whether you're being genuine what you say. But if you're a singer singing a song, they can see that Ed Sheeran and Adele are very honest. And then they can see pop singers who are doing a disposable song to make money. That's why Adele and Ed Sheeran are so globally successful for so long now. It's the public totally understand and see their honesty.
You said I came into this business with no background in it and you bludgeoned your way to the top.
Correct.
I couldn't start a business with no background in business. I wouldn't know where to begin. How did you do that?
I mean, that applies to anyone of any kind of business of any field. You start knowing very little, but you learn. It goes back to what I said about learning. If you want to do something well, you learn, you listen, you talk to people, you ask them questions, you milk their minds. And I reciprocate now. I take on young people and I give them opportunities and I teach them and I let them learn, and hopefully they go into the world and have success as a result. And I was very fortunate when I started out that I had some people who I could learn off and learn from.
What's the 5-year plan for InterTalent?
I have a big responsibility. Now, a lot of my clients are parents with families who rely on income from me to keep their families going. And equally, my staff rely on me to provide them with income and increased income. And when they have difficulties and needs, I'm the person who's going to have to support them. I'm the person who's going to support them for their maternity leave. So my responsibility while my clients and staff are with me is to make sure they're looked after and they have the best lives possible.
How important is your reputation to you and what people think of you?
Well, there are two questions again there. What people think of me and my reputation. The one thing you learn when you put your head above the parapet is some will love you and some will hate you, because people form an opinion, and they form an opinion of you based often on not only what you do, but also their personal circumstance. So they might dislike you, but the reason they might dislike you is because they're jealous of you. They might be rude to you because they're insecure. It might not be because of your problem. So I think as you get older, you learn to love and be friends with those that love you, and put those that don't to one side, because you can't spend your life worrying about those that don't love you, because the time's not there. But that comes from maturity and getting older to actually accept the whole world won't love you. I was talking to Ricky Gervais once about this, and I was at the American embassy, the American ambassador giving a party, and I was talking to Ricky Gervais. There was some poll had been in the paper that day. I can't remember how we were talking about it. We were talking about how he's one of the most hated people in the world and how did he feel about that. And he made the comment to me that when he started out, 200 people hated him, 200 people loved him. Now 20 million hate him. but 20 million love him.
Mm.
Ricky Gervais can sell out the O2. He gets so much hate. Russell Brand gets so much hate. He sells out arenas. Who's the winner?
Mm-hmm.
Reputation. You only have one reputation, and there is the adage, you can spend a lifetime building a reputation and you can lose it overnight. Mm. And there's a famous advertising man called Saatchi, and he had a reputation of being one of the most decent, kind men combined with a brilliant business brain. Mm. There was a photograph of him with Nigella Lawson with his hands around her throat outside a restaurant, strangling his girlfriend. Now, of course he wasn't strangling his girlfriend, and they were playing. But that one picture of him with his hands around the throat of his girlfriend destroyed his reputation overnight. And so reputation is everything. And you have to be very careful to protect your reputation, because a reputation can easily be taken away from you.
What inspires you?
Great people who achieve things inspire me.